The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The failing New York Times today published an anonymous op-ed written by a current senior member of Trump's administration. It is a scorching editorial. You want to hear some of it?
Okay.
Wow. Again, this was written by a senior staffer who currently works for the president of the United States. This person wrote, "I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. I work for the president, but like-minded colleagues and I have vowed to thwart parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. The dilemma, which he does not fully grasp, is that many of the senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. I would know. I am one of them."
Oh. Earth-shattering. Groundbreaking.
Remember in the horror movies in the 80s where it'd be, "The call is coming from inside the White House." "We believe our first duty is to this country, and the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. That is why many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office. The root of the problem is the president's amorality. Meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back. It may be cold comfort in this chaotic era, but Americans should know that there are adults in the room. We fully recognize what is happening, and we are trying to do what's right, even when Donald Trump won't. Given the instability, many witnessed there were early whispers within the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment." That's the "you're out of here" amendment, which would start a complex process for removing the president, but no one wanted to precipitate a constitutional crisis, so we will do what we can to steer the administration in the right direction until one way or another, it's over." And that is something. I mean, that is really...
That is something.
Remarkable. And I have to say, I'm surprised by how good a writer Ivanka is. I mean, I never would have guessed. Of course, there's a lot of speculation now about who wrote this. And this, to me, is the most interesting theory. Somebody online noticed an unusual word in the op-ed. And the word was lodestar. They wrote, "We may no longer have Senator McCain, but we will always have his example, a lodestar for restoring honor to public life." Which is, that's not a common word, lodestar.
No.
Not a lot of people use that word. But you know who does use that word? This guy.
It really was the lodestar.
And that's going to continue to be a lodestar.
Jack's lodestar.
As our lodestar.
You are a lodestar.
Lodestar.
That's right. Vice President Michael Elizabeth Pence uses the word lodestar like it's actually. Wouldn't that be something if it was Mike Pence? Trump just announced that the Space Force's first mission is to locate and destroy the lodestar, whatever that may be. And this is going to drive Trump absolutely nuts. Can you imagine what it must be like to have a job at which almost everyone who works for you thinks you're a complete idiot? I can't. I'll tell you something. It's no fun at all. This op-ed comes at a time when the president's minions are pushing back against a new book, yesterday's news, a book by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Bob Woodward, who interviewed dozens of Trump staffers, has hundreds of hours of tapes. But the president weighed in on that today with his thoughts on this upcoming publication.
The book
means nothing. It's a work of fiction. The book is a work of fiction. The book is a work of fiction. The book is fiction.
Tell us what
the
you really mean.
The book is total fiction. It's just more fiction. The book is total fiction.
Yeah, he tweeted about it, too. He's doing a really good job of plugging this book he thinks is total fiction. He wrote, "Isn't it a shame that someone can write an article or a book, totally make up stories, and form a picture of a person that is literally the exact opposite of the fact and get away with it without retribution or cost? Don't know why Washington politicians don't change libel laws." And he's right. It is a shame. And that would be like, for instance, someone knowingly and falsely claiming that the first African-American president was born in Kenya and was not an American, you know? Meanwhile, Trump also denies a claim in the book that he called Attorney General Jeff Sessions mentally retarded. He tweeted that he's never called anyone, he's never used that term. And then, of course, somebody immediately found tapes of him calling two different people mentally retarded. Mm-hmm. Has a president ever had to deny calling someone mentally retarded before? On top of all of this, yesterday, as this Woodward expose excerpts were released, this is real. Lightning struck the White House.
It did.
Remember a few months ago when a sinkhole opened on the White House lawn? Now it's being hit by lightning. How many more signs from God does Congress need? What are they holding out for?
All right. Yeah. There's a bit of Jimmy Kimmel for you. They're all back from vacation now and with a plethora of news to talk about, but the yesterday's op-ed in the New York Times was the most stunning of all. And it figures, you know, this show is done live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern each day. It runs live at NicoleSandler.com and on my stream and on my TuneIn channel, on my YouTube channel. And then it repeats at 6 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network, along with a few other wonderful online outlets like Netroots Radio and others that carry the show. Here's the problem. You know, radio is always meant to be done live, I think. I'm old school. Because I finish the show at 4 and then I immediately start, you know, uploading the podcast and posting it and doing all the, you know, post-production work that I have to do because I do everything by myself here. And so I finished up yesterday. It must have been about, I want to say about 4:30. I got through it quickly and I walk out in the living room and I turn on the TV and that's when I got the first inkling that there was something in the New York Times. So, of course, I run back here in my studio. I open up the New York Times and I find, oh, my God, this op-ed. Now, I know Jimmy Kimmel shared a few parts of it with you, but the whole thing is so earth-shaking. I'm trying to think of a momentous type of word to use. Groundbreaking, earth-shattering, holy grail of a news story broke, which is the New York Times published an op-ed anonymously. The only identification of the writer was their description of him or her as a senior administration official. There's a note attached to the op-ed. It says, "The Times today is taking the rare step of publishing an anonymous op-ed essay. We have done so at the request of the author, a senior official in the Trump administration whose identity is known to us and whose job would be jeopardized by its disclosure. We believe publishing this essay anonymously is the only way to deliver an important perspective to our readers. We invite you to submit a question about the essay or our vetting process here." So, you know, they're taking questions. I know some questions were answered today, such as, "Is there any circumstances under which you would ever release the identity of the person who wrote this op-ed?" And the answer was not a one. Not a one. So let me share with you what this person wrote. I myself have mixed emotions on it. I'll tell you what I think, but I do want to know what you think. And this is a good day, as good a day as any to open up the phone lines, 954-889-6410. And just so you know how phone calls work on this show, because I do everything by myself, I don't have a producer or a screener to answer your calls. I take them in the order they come in. If I see you call in, I'll put you on hold. You'll hear what's going on over the air. And then I can only take you one at a time. So it's all a matter of timing. So, just if you want to weigh in, I'd love to know what you think about this. But let me share it with you because maybe some people didn't read the whole thing. So it was published in the online edition yesterday afternoon, somewhere right around 4:30 Eastern, I'm guessing. And of course, it's in today's hard copy of the New York Times, and it reads like this. Well, the headline reads, "I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. I work for the president, but like-minded colleagues and I have vowed to thwart parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations." All righty then. And here is how it reads. President Trump is facing a test to his presidency unlike any faced by a modern American leader. It's not just that the special counsel looms large, or that the country is bitterly divided over Mr. Trump's leadership, or even that his party might well lose the House to an opposition hell-bent on his downfall. The dilemma, which he does not fully grasp, is that many of the senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. I would know. I am one of them. To be clear, ours is not the popular, quote, resistance of the left. We want the administration to succeed and think that many of its policies have already made America safer and more prosperous. But we believe our first duty is to this country, and the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. That is why many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office. The root of the problem is the president's amorality. Anyone who works with him knows he is not moored to any discernible first principles that guide his decision-making. Although he was elected as a Republican, the president shows little affinity for deals long espoused by conservatives, free minds, free markets, and free people. At best, he has invoked these ideals in scripted settings. At worst, he has attacked them outright. In addition, to his mass marketing of the notion that the press is the enemy of the people, President Trump's impulses are generally anti-trade and anti-democratic. Don't get me wrong, there are bright spots that the near ceaseless negative coverage of the administration fails to capture. Effective deregulation, historic tax reform, a more robust military, and more. But these successes have come despite, not because of, the president's leadership style, which is impetuous, adversarial, petty, and ineffective. From the White House to executive branch departments and agencies, senior officials will privately admit their daily disbelief at the commander-in-chief's comments and actions. Most are working to insulate their operations from his whims. Meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back. There is literally no telling whether he might change his mind from one minute to the next, a top official complained to me recently, exasperated by an Oval Office meeting at which the president flip-flopped on a major policy decision he'd made only a week earlier. The erratic behavior would be more concerning if it weren't for unsung heroes in and around the White House. Some of his aides have been cast as villains by the media. But in private, they have gone to great lengths to keep bad decisions contained to the West Wing, though they are clearly not always successful. It may be cold comfort in this chaotic era, but Americans should know that there are adults in the room. We fully recognize what is happening, and we are trying to do what's right even when Donald Trump won't. The result is a two-track presidency. Take foreign policy. In public and in private, President Trump shows a preference for autocrats and dictators, such as President Vladimir Putin of Russia and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un, and displays little genuine appreciation for the ties that bind us to allied, like-minded nations. Astute observers have noted, though, that the rest of the administration is operating on another track, one where countries like Russia are called out for meddling and punished accordingly, and where allies around the world are engaged as peers rather than ridiculed as rivals. On Russia, for instance, the president was reluctant to expel so many of Mr. Putin's spies as punishment for the poisoning of a former Russian spy in Britain. He complained for weeks about senior staff members letting him get boxed into further confrontation with Russia, and he expressed frustration that the United States continued to impose sanctions on the country for its malign behavior. But his national security team knew better. Such actions had to be taken to hold Moscow accountable. This isn't the work of the so-called deep state. It's the work of the steady state. Given the instability many witnessed, there were early whispers within the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment, which would start a complex process for removing the president. But no one wanted to participate in a constitutional crisis. Aren't we in one? Sorry, back to the op-ed. So we will do what we can to steer the administration in the right direction until, one way or another, it's over. The bigger concern is not what Mr. Trump has done to the presidency, but rather what we as a nation have allowed him to do to us. We have sunk low with him and allowed our discourse to be stripped of civility. Senator John McCain put it best in his farewell letter. All Americans should heed his words and break free of the tribalism trap with the high aim of uniting through our shared values and love of this great nation. We may no longer have Senator McCain, but we will always have his example, a lodestar, for restoring honor to public life and our national dialogue. Mr. Trump may fear such honorable men, but we should revere them. There is a quiet resistance within the administration of people choosing to put country first. But the real difference will be made by everyday citizens rising above politics, reaching across the aisle and resolving to shed the labels in favor of a single one, Americans. And then it just says the writer is a senior official in the Trump administration. And here we are. Nobody really knows who this is. And part of me thinks we'll find out sooner rather than later, because Trump and, his loyalists inside the administration will do whatever they can to unearth the author of this missive. But then again, there are tons of leaks from this White House every day, and they've not been able to identify any of them. I read one thing last night that said who the top five contenders were. Kellyanne Conway was one. Mike Pence was one. I forget who. There's a running list. Jim Acosta of CNN posted a current CNN tally of Trump officials denying they are the anonymous New York Times writer. Pence, Pompeo, Mattis, Mnuchin, Haley, Coates, Sessions, Azar, Alex, Acosta, Wheeler, Nielsen, Haspel, Wilkie, Perdue, Perry, Mulvaney have all released statements personally or through their offices saying, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. And there have been a mixture of reactions to it. On first blush, my thought was, thank God there are adults in the room. But then as I got further into it and I'm reading this thing, I see that this person, supports a lot of the things that Trump stands for here, like this part. There are bright spots that the near ceaseless negative coverage of the administration fails to capture. Effective deregulation. Thank you. I like my air and water clean, if you don't mind. Historic tax reform. Giving tax breaks to the billionaires is not historic tax reform. A more robust military, kill them all, and more. I don't agree with those things. But if this person is going to keep the president from, pushing the nuclear button, well, then that's a good thing. The question, though, is, yes, we are now in a crisis. It's not going to take them starting 25th Amendment processes to put us into a constitutional crisis. We already have this missive in the paper of record telling us that a good number of people inside the administration at senior levels believe that this president is unhinged and furthermore, unfit for service, unfit to act as the president of the United States. Now, you and I have known that all along, but the sad thing is that the Republican Party seems to be, hell-bent on backing this guy no matter what. And that should have all of us frightened. All right, I said I'd go to the phones. The phone number is 954-889-6410, or you can Skype to me at Nicole Sandler. Let's start with this one calling from the 571 area code. Who's this?
This is Ryan.
Hi, Ryan. Where are you calling from?
Hi. I'm calling from Fairfax, Virginia.
Okay. So what do you think?
All right, well, here's what I think. It's funny all this is coming out, but it's shocking that this, what some people call in the media, a coup.
Yeah.
They're blatantly, whoever leaked this out, they're blatantly saying, hey, you don't have to worry about what we're doing in the White House. we already are doing it. Mm-hmm. If we just look at our damage, we're already doing it already. Whoever done, I don't think the people that you announced that you was reading off mm-hmm. that made the statement, that yep. made seem they didn't do it,
yep.
I don't think they did it. I think it's some lower level people.
But that here's the thing. The
new became the, what I know. If you are you familiar with the 1973 movie, The Spook Who Sat by the Door?
No.
Well, it was a movie about a gentleman who, and it's a book. It was a book that came out in the 60s and 70s where a gentleman got into the FBI as the first African-American candidate to be in the FBI or the CIA. Well, he learned all the expertise and training of inside the intelligence agency, took it back to Chicago, Illinois, and became a radical black militant
mm-hmm.
to overthrow the U.S. government. I think the spook who sat by the door is happening again. This time, it's not to overthrow a federal government. It's to overthrow a presidency. So just like Omarosa was the spook who sat by the door, there's somebody else that's also playing the spook who sat by the door, but they're not telling who they are.
Right, but here's the thing.
They're keeping it
anonymous. It can't be some low-level person, because the one thing we do know is the New York Times obviously vetted this person, and they would not say it's a senior administration official if it was not a senior administration official. Now, that could be someone in the West Wing. It could be somebody in the cabinet. It could be someone at one of the agencies who is in a senior level position. So, I mean, it's a pretty big universe out there, but senior level says a lot. And the New York Times knows that they're going to be under a lot of scrutiny for this. They wouldn't use some, you know, some peon and claim that they're a senior level administration official.
Nicole, a lot of your peons, don't get it twisted. A lot of your peons may play like they're dumb, but they know a lot more than what
of course
you
they
think
do.
They know.
Of course they do. But the point I'm making is the New York Times wouldn't then describe them as a senior level administration official. In order to get that designation,
I think that's code.
The New York Times had to be convinced that it was actually a senior level administration official, not someone they can say is the coffee boy, if you know what I mean. So somebody with a title and a position that, you know, has them up there in the upper echelons of this administration.
Well, I think honestly, not to be on a conspiracy theory, mm-hmm. but I strongly believe that the senior advisor title,
yeah.
that can be anybody. That can be anybody.
Okay, well, we disagree on
that. But
who
is the real senior advisor to this president?
Ivanka. Teddy.
Well,
yeah.
If Ivanka's the one that's
filling
But
she's
the
not.
Beam,
she's not smart enough. Whoever this is obviously has a few brains because it's well written. I don't think it would be Ivanka or Jared. I think they're too loyal to him. The Pence thing is enticing, but it's too easy of a setup. They use a weird word that Pence uses to maybe, you know, to push to get everyone thinking, oh, it must be Pence because they use the word.
Know what happened to Reagan back in the 80s when he got in. And there was talk underneath the table that 41 was trying to have him assassinated so he could take over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did hear those talks and how that gunman from West Virginia got that close to him. So it could be Pence or it could be somebody that is using the title senior advisor as a sort of like a code to sort of throw off the mass press saying,
right,
we're going to go look at the senior advisor.
Yeah, but I think you're lost there.
But we're not going to.
Yeah, because, again, this is the judgment of the New York Times using that designation, senior advisor, or senior White House official, or senior administration official, excuse me. So, anyway, do you think we're going to find out who it is?
I doubt it. If it comes out as one of those in the White House that was a loyalist to him, mm-hmm. the president, man, get ready for the fireworks.
Yeah.
Because the Hannitys, the Limbaughs, the Becks are going to, excuse my language, they're going to shit bricks with the base.
Well, of course, they're circling the wagons now trying to protect him. Call me Tripp. Our pal Tripp is a lawyer, and he says in the chat room, lodestar is a common phrase in law. I think it could easily be a lawyer, especially one that deals with civil litigation. It's a standard in determining damages. That's interesting. Anyone who has done law school would be familiar with it. Well, that shows why I'd never heard the word lodestar before.
It's damn interesting.
Yep.
I've never seen this
is.
Sort of stuff happen. I've been in this earth since 1982. I've never seen this before.
No, me either. This is
never.
We're certainly making history. There, you know, one thing can be said is never a dull moment. Anyway, Ryan, thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. 954-889-6410 is the number if you're on Skype. You can just Skype into Nicole Sandler, all one word. What do you think? Do you think this person's going to be outed? Do you think it is... Pisces Bobby says it was the word for the day last week on one of the dictionary websites. Okay, so maybe it's not that unusual of a word. When I heard Jimmy Kimmel, you know, with all those clips of Mike Pence saying lodestar, 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 and it's a word that honestly I had never heard before, I thought that gave it away because Mike Pence, not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, you know. I don't know. At first I thought this is great and the person shouldn't out themselves because we need all the people inside that administration, inside that White House, who will understand what danger we're in, and you know, can keep protecting us. Many in the chat room are pointing out that Tom Hartman called it a coup d'état. It very easily could be. Do you remember a few months ago we had a discussion on the generals who were supposed to be the adults in the room and how, you know, we're hoping that they'll protect us should Trump ever decide to go for the, you know, the nuclear football, that they would stop him. We heard the stories of Gary Cohn, who said he took some papers off his desk that Trump wanted to sign that would have been enormous travesties if he had signed these things. I'm trying to remember specifically what they were, but they would have been bad moves for this administration to take. And Gary Cohn says he, you know, surreptitiously removed a couple of the papers so those didn't get signed, and Trump never even noticed. That says a lot. We are living in dangerous times right now simply by the fact of having this man in the White House. Every time he opens his mouth, he puts us all in danger. So I'm thinking, all right, you know, I want as many of these resistors to remain put to keep us as safe as possible in a situation like this. But when we were pondering, you know, the generals being the ones keeping us safe, well, wouldn't that be a military coup? If, say, a general, say the president wanted to, you know, launch missiles at North Korea or wanted to assassinate Bashar al-Assad in Syria, which is one of the stories in Woodward's book. And is it up to a general to stop it? I mean, we didn't elect the general president. Now, I didn't vote for Trump. And again, you could say it is not a legitimate election outcome because none of us, 3 million more people voted for Hillary Clinton than voted for Donald Trump. And now we're seeing that Russia was complicit in at least influencing the elections, that this is a less than spotless election, that there are problems inherent in how Donald Trump got into office. Lava Q says not to worry, think Hague. General Mattis is in charge. See, that's a military coup, and that's dangerous. However you look at it, as Cynthia is saying, this is dangerous. I fear what the filth will do. Because again, although these people, the ones who are claiming to be part of this resistance inside the White House, you know, they're conservatives. They're not our liberal friends. We know that. So do they get to pick and choose which of Donald Trump's flawed policies they want to see carried out and which ones they don't? Yes, we are in a weird place. We'll talk it over with Howie Klein in just a few minutes. In fact, let's do it. We'll take a break now and come back on the other side with Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny and Blue America next.
These are the sounds of crushed souls the sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
And on a day like this, we actually, I think we need a second picture of those Dirty Debbies because things are all crazy. Howie Klein of Down With Tyranny and the Blue America Pack. Hello, sir.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm still kind of reeling from this op-ed in the New York Times. Sort of going back and forth on it. In one sense, glad that there's, as they put it, adults in the room who see what a dangerous position we're in. But at the same time, a little nervous because I don't know who these people are and what their goals and ideas are. And nobody elected them to run the country. And so it seems like we're in a really precarious position right now.
Well, nobody elected Trump to run the country either, but Putin.
Yeah.
So what did Hillary call them again, the ones who voted for him?
The deplorables.
The deplorables, yes.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter. These are all Republicans, you know, and they're doing the Republican thing. They're not going to ever be our heroes. They're not going to ever be what we want. But it's good that someone is, you know, sort of keeping this, like, psychopath under control. I'm hearing a big buzz out of Washington today that it was Dan Coats.
Really?
I don't know if that's true. I have no idea if it's true, but that's what I'm hearing.
And he issued a stern denial, said it was not him, he had nothing to do with it. But they're all coming forward and saying, it wasn't me.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, who would say it was?
Right.
You know, that's why whoever did it was anonymous. They don't want anyone to know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my two favorite guesses are him, although I didn't think of that right away. I thought of it after I started hearing about it. But then also Kellyanne, she's the other one. But let's not play this game, right?
We really right. No, there's a lot of other stuff going on.
I'm excited. I just got off the phone with Amar Campa-Najjar.
Okay.
Who's running against Drunken Hunter.
Yes.
And he is just great. I had never talked to him before. I was having a really hard time getting in touch with him, as was everybody else. I mean, everyone I know who should be able to get in touch with him, they all said to me, oh, if you get his number, please give it to me. So I've been busy since I got off the phone with him, sending his number and introducing him to everybody. But the guy seems great. I mean, I had such a good time talking to him. You know, you talk to a candidate, you say, well, what's your favorite music?
Uh-huh.
And then the candidate comes back with, like, Metallica, and like, all right. I mean, you know, it's somebody I can talk to. So anyway, you know, very cool guy, very hip. You know what? I think Digby's on the phone with him right now.
Oh, cool.
doing an interview.
Awesome. That's great. So this is a guy who is running against Duncan Hunter until the news broke of last week and the indictments against him for corruption became news. It seemed that the Democrats had no chance against him. This is a very Republican district. Well, now, has anything changed since his indictment?
You bet. First of all, it takes, even though we're on top of the news, like you and I, probably most of the audience here too, we live for this stuff, but most people don't. So, people were shocked when the first poll came out that showed Duncan Hunter, still, I think, 6 or 8 points ahead of him.
Yeah.
And people, people like us are thinking, how is that possible that Duncan Hunter is such a criminal? And, it's like, I don't know, what was it, like 60 pages of indictments? And how is it possible that he could be doing so well against Campa Najjar when Campa Najjar is a great candidate anyway? But you know what it is? People, it takes a while for things to filter down into the into the general public. So now a new poll just came out from Tulchin, and that poll shows that it's exactly tied at 46-46. And I think as more and more people start understanding what Hunter did, they'll move over to either not voting if they're Republicans, or maybe if they're independents, skip right over to Amar. So I was very excited because yesterday the big paper down there is the
Union Tribune.
Union Tribune. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if it was Tribune Union or Union Tribune, but of course Union Tribune. And they just just ripped into Duncan Hunter. I mean, unbelievably.
Oh, good.
I mean, and just went right through it. The guy tried. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. But the guy tried to blame his wife on all this stuff.
Yep.
And part of the indictment is that he was spending the money on hookers.
Oh my God!
And is he going to blame that on his wife too? He had they said that he had 3, extramarital relationships going on, and he was using money to court these women.
Wow, wow.
Yeah. So I don't think that was his wife paying for that. So, I mean, the guy is just like, he's an alcoholic who needs to get treatment, badly needs to get treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And he just ought to step down anyway. But he's hanging in there, and he shouldn't. And they were arraigned. Him and his wife were both arraigned. And, so there's going to be a trial. It's pretty amazing. I mean, and they have got him on so many things. I mean, every kind of like criminal activity that you're ever going to get from a white collar type criminal, he's guilty of.
Yeah,
or I shouldn't say that. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's guilty, but I shouldn't be saying that. I shouldn't say. I mean, he's accused of.
Right. Well, it's interesting because when the first story that broke was Trump's first endorser in Congress, Chris Collins. And at first he said he's not stepping down and he's, still running for election, for re-election. And that lasted all of one day. Chris Collins has since pulled out. He didn't step down, as far as I know. He's still in Congress, but he's not running for re-election anymore, although his name's on the ballot in New York. Hunter, he said he's not stepping down, right? He's still running.
Oh, yes. Hunter is fighting. But a similar thing happened with him because, once Paul Ryan realized what all the things he was charged against, he said to him, get off your committees.
Yes.
You have to resign from the committees. And he said, I'm not resigning from my committees. And, he's fighting, right?
Mm-hmm.
24 hours later, he said, well, I think I'm going to resign from these committees. He's not on any committees anymore. And one of the reasons is because he was using the committees for criminal activities.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Ryan wanted him off them.
Right. Now, Howie, this stuff has been going on forever. As long as there's been Washington, D.C., there's been corruption in Washington, D.C. But you cite in a post I think you have going up and down with tyranny, a new poll that says 3 in 10 voters say that corruption in Washington is the most important topic for 2018 candidates to discuss.
Isn't that amazing? I've never heard that before.
No, me either.
Think about that. I mean, they're not saying it's an important topic. I mean, a lot more said that it's an important topic.
Mm-hmm.
These people, that number that you just cited, 1 in 3?
3 in 10.
That means they're saying it's the number one, more than Medicare.
Wow.
I mean, more than health care,
wow,
more than jobs, more than the economy. They're saying the number one issue for them is corruption in Washington. They want to see that addressed.
That's amazing. You know, but corruption isn't limited to the Republicans, unfortunately. Zephyr Teachout today filed a lawsuit accusing Sean Patrick Maloney, who I think you referred to him as one of the most corrupt conservative Dems in Congress, of violating state campaign finance law by funneling over $1.4 million raised by his congressional campaign into his bid to become New York Attorney General.
Right. I mean, this guy's a lawyer. This guy wants to be Attorney General. You think he would know a couple of things about the law?
I would think.
I mean, he's been in Congress for a while. He doesn't know this.
Yep.
And he certainly does know it. And, you know, I mean, I have hated this guy for a very, very long time. Once I found out that he was literally sitting in a hedge fund office raising money, calling people from this hedge fund office, and that's how he raises his money. And, you know, he's just – when I say he's one of the most conservative Democrats in Congress, I'm not just pulling that out of the air. I mean, right. He is. His voting record is extremely conservative. And people say, how can he be conservative? He's gay, and he has a beautiful family. He can't be conservative. Why not? He's certainly liberal when it comes to issues about the LGBT community. He's also liberal when it comes to women's rights. And he's good on social issues, absolutely, no question about it. But when it comes to anything to do with bread and butter, we're looking at a Republican. We're not looking at a Democrat. He's terrible. He's absolutely terrible. And, you know, I wish he would, and he's not giving up his seat in Congress. He's running for both.
Really?
Oh, yes. And what does that say to his constituents up in upstate New York?
It says
Does he really want to be congressman? I mean, we're liable to, and this is a close seat. This is not a Democratic seat. This is a swing district. So we're liable to lose the district because of this guy. And what I'm hearing is that the only reason he's running, because he's not, is to just take votes away from Zephyr Teachout. I can't remember her name, but there is a sort of a Cuomo character who's running, and he wants to help Cuomo to throw the election to this other woman, and he's, you know, so that when there's a debate, he and the other woman just attack Zephyr.
Oh my God!
And anything that the other woman says, he agrees.
Wow.
And they're just after Zephyr Teachout. That's what this is all about.
Well, that sucks because Zephyr Teachout would be an amazing Attorney General for New York.
Absolutely.
She'd be absolutely incredible. She's a Fordham University law professor, but she's been an activist for years. I mean, I remember Zephyr Teachout from, my early days of doing talk radio, and she was just an activist who was always popping up at protests everywhere. That's a name you remember.
Exactly. And she was one of the first name people, so one of the first people with a big name that anyone would know to endorse Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, like really early.
Right.
She came out and said, this is what we need.
Right.
So, in fact, I think that was the way – no, that wasn't the way, but that was one of the first times I had heard about Alexandria was from Zephyr.
And we've
endorsed. Blue America, of course. We've endorsed Zephyr.
Of course. Now, that primary, it's sort of the second primary in New York. There was already one. They split their primaries up in a weird way, but election
federal
is
candidates were the first one. So anyone running for a federal office, and then this one is for people who are running for statewide office next Tuesday.
All right.
That's the state assembly. This is the state senate, governor, attorney general, secretary of state, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So that's next week. There was one primary on Wednesday. Most of the big primaries are now done, and we're pretty much into the meat of general election territory. But Massachusetts had its primary on Thursday, and there was another upset. On Tuesday, 10-term, fairly progressive Democrat Mike Capuano was
very progressive.
Yeah, I mean, I remember he was a good guy, but he was unseated by Ayanna Pressley. What do we know about her?
Well, she's good, too. She's been in the city council. It's hard to, if someone's in the legislature, I can tell you if they're good or not, because I can just go through the records.
Right.
It's relatively easy. But if someone is in the city council, it's harder. It's not as easy. Now, by the way, we didn't endorse anybody in this race because they're both good. But personally, I was leaning towards Capuano. I know Capuano. Mm-hmm. I know he's very good. I know his voting record in Congress. He's not perfect. No one is. I don't know one single member of Congress is perfect. Nobody.
Nope.
End of nobody. But Capuano is as good as it gets. And, there were a couple of issues I didn't agree with him on. But, there's nobody who I don't disagree with on something. But, you know, I still thought he was the better candidate. She, on the other hand, it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's not bad to, like, have more women in Congress. It's not bad to have more women of color in Congress. So I kind of like that. So, you know, on the one hand, I think he is more progressive than she is. On the other hand, like I said, you know, it's kind of nice to have more women and more women of color in Congress. The thing is I'm a little bit worried because her foreign policy stuff is not good. I mean, she's oddly enough, she seems to be a Zionist and not fair to the Palestinians in her thinking. But we'll see how that plays out. I'm not so sure about that. But what I do know is that she was kind of, every Democrat I know, every progressive challenger I know says the same thing. I am not taking PAC money. Well, that's really easy to say because the PACs aren't giving you any money, right. So you're not losing anything. I mean, I'm including my friends in this, you know, people who I really know and really like. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, and they're being honest, I'm not taking PAC money. I'm not taking money from oil and gas. Well, you know, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. But PACs aren't giving them money. Oil and gas ain't giving them money. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit of a farce. Then we have to see what happens in the future. Once they're an incumbent, are they going to still not take PAC money? Are they going to still not take oil and gas money? I hope so, and I'd like to watch that and see how that turns out. Sometimes it turns out well, sometimes less well. So with her, I'm not taking any PAC money. Okay, but you were last year, and will you next year? So, you know, that's a little scary. She was kind of in cahoots. When you're in city government, the big enemy is going to be the real estate developers. And she was definitely in cahoots with them. And she was taking money from them and voting for the stuff that they wanted. So that was the, you know, and is that a national issue that you're going to deal with in Congress? Absolutely not. I mean, all of the national issues, except for the foreign policy stuff, she seems really good on, like really good on.
Right. Good.
So,
well,
you know, there's a lot of celebration about, we have a great new progressive. You know, it's a lot of people talking, you don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
You know, Mike Capuano was a great progressive.
Yes.
And, you know, she's going to be, I think she could be a great progressive too. And in the end, maybe she'll even be better, except on peace. Maybe she'll even be better than Mike. We'll see.
Right.
You know, it's not right necessarily to be dancing on Mike's political grave because Mike was really, really good. And, you know, maybe she'll be good. Maybe she'll be better. But we have to see. You know, in terms of the people where their whole lives or their political lives are all based on, you know, things that have to do with peace. They were not happy when this happened because Mike was a very articulate ally of theirs, and that's why the peace oriented groups were supporting him rather than her.
Okay,
but you know we should be happy that he didn't get replaced by someone who is bad. At least you know that's the worst thing when a conservative is when a conservative comes in and beats a progressive. That's when it's really bad. This is a different kind of thing. Where, I mean, his district, Capuano's district, now her district, was most of Boston. But there's a big chunk of Boston that, so their district is the 7th. But the 8th district, it has a big chunk of Boston, too. I mean, it's not just a little sliver, but it's a lot of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what percent, but let's say a third of Boston is in the 8th district. And there, we have a really, really bad conservative Democrat, anti-choice, and anti-everything, you know, just not the kind of thing that you think of as a city, like a city in Boston would have as their congressman. There's a guy's named Stephen Lynch, you know, who votes badly and votes with the Republicans way, way too much. Less now than he used to, but only less now than he used to because he's afraid. I mean, I know where this guy's head is, and if he could get away with it, it would be much worse. But, you know, an anti-choice opportunity comes up, and he's there. Not the kind of Democrat that we like, not a Democrat from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party.
Right.
So, you know, but no one made a big fuss about this one. I mean, here he is, that, you know, they share neighborhoods. And he, you know, Brianna Wu ran against him. And nobody seemed, in the progressive community, locally, there were, you know, people in the progressive community were trying to help Breonna. But nationally, I didn't see anybody step up for her. And, you know, she would have been an interesting member of Congress, and she would have beaten a terrible conservative. And that would have been, to me, that would have been a big deal. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see any kind of activity on that.
Gotcha.
That's the way it goes.
Gotcha. I got a question for you that we were going to talk about last week, and we ran out of time. But our pal Robert Hill in New York City said in the chat room, maybe ask about Beto O'Rourke. I just gave money to Beto via Act Blue. You were going to talk about him and his band last week.
Probably that's not what he's asking about. But
no.
Beto, you know, I just put up, when did it go? Oh, last night. So the we have this thing every midnight where it's called the midnight, midnight meme. It was midnight meme of the day.
Yeah.
And last night we had one that was very, very powerful that included a video which everybody should watch who's interested in Beto, because it shows Beto at a you know, a campaign forum where he's, you know, and in Texas, you're in a campaign forum and you don't know what's going to come. You know, there could be Republicans, there can be conservative Democrats. So I don't know who this guy was that I'm going to talk about now, but someone asked a leading question that he was very much opposed to the NFL players who take the knee.
Right.
The question came in like, you've seen this video already?
Oh, yes. Oh, everyone has, I think.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, anyway, it went viral.
It's up on Down With Tyranny. And I mean, it showed, you know, him not being afraid to talk about a very, very, very contentious issue that especially a lot of white people still don't understand mm-hmm. why this is important. And he explained it, and he explained it very, very well, and wound up getting lots of applause.
Yeah. Well, so the video went viral. I think it propelled him to new heights. So they're in a virtual dead heat here. This could really happen, right?
It's, you know, one day there'll be a poll that shows Beto leading by two. The next day there'll be a poll showing Ted Cruz leading by two. So, that's all within the margin of error. So we don't really know. It's kind of a dead heat, which is hard for people to even get their heads around.
Right.
Because how do you have a dead heat in Texas between a Democrat and a Republican? How does that happen? And that used to happen. And maybe Beto's going to be the one to make it happen again. I don't know, of course, but, you know, Blue America endorsed him. We endorsed him the first time he ran, when he ran for Congress in El Paso, and when he took out a conservative Democrat in a primary and then went on to win the seat. And we just endorsed him for the U.S. Senate as well this cycle.
That's great. And now he's not a uber progressive, but for Texas he is very progressive, right?
Yeah, for Texas, I mean, he's certain things he's very, very progressive on. Certain things he's, you know, I mean, when you come to, you know, any of the immigration policy, he's a leader in that,
mm-hmm.
and that's because he's from El Paso. And there's no question about what El Paso means when it comes to immigration. This is like, you know, the Mexican side of the border and the U.S. side of the border are like one big city. And, you know, people work on both sides of the border. And, you know, he knows how this works. And so he's been a really good spokesman. He is a guy who works behind the scenes talking to shaky Democrats and maybe even Republicans, and definitely Republicans. Why am I saying maybe? Definitely Republicans, that this is an issue that should be handled in a sane way and not, you know, based on racism of a few crackpots, more than a few.
Yes.
So he's very good on that, and not just very good, but a leader on that. Same thing when it comes to marijuana legalization.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't necessarily be a partisan issue, but it certainly is an issue between progressive and reactionary. And he wrote a book about it.
Wow.
This guy is really, really good on that. So, like I said, some issues he is as good as it comes. Other issues he's a little bit shaky on. But overall, you know, look, you want to compare him to Ted Cruz? I mean, there's no issue where he's
right.
not better than Ted
of
Cruz.
Of course. Of course. Oh, just to see the numbers on election night of Ted Cruz going down to Beto O'Rourke would just be just beautiful. I got one more question for you. A story that David Dayan published at The Intercept a couple of days ago, and the headline reads, Nancy Pelosi promises that Democrats will handcuff the Democratic agenda if they retake the House. And he goes on to say that in the event that a Democratic president succeeds Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi has said she will resurrect the PAYGO rule that mandates all new spending is offset with budget cuts or tax increases. I don't know. It seems like every day I'm more in the camp that Nancy Pelosi's got to go.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was a really bad thing that she did, and she's now tap dancing around it. But, yeah, I mean, it's not just her. It's her and Hoyer both. They both believe in this. And, you know, they think that the way you win elections is by appealing to conservatives, even when the Republicans aren't. And this is a really, really bad move. David isn't the only person that's pointed that out. I mean, I've been writing about this for a really long time. And, you know, and usually when I write about it, I have the source of sources talking about it as well. And that's Stephanie Kelton.
Oh, yes.
And Stephanie is great on this kind of stuff,
she is.
And great at explaining why this bullshit should not go. And when I told her about the PAYGO, when Nancy announced it, she flipped out. I mean, she was like, she went crazy. I mean, it's such a bad thing to do, and it's so terrible. And, you know, Nancy doesn't understand that. Nancy is, I'm afraid, from another era.
Yep.
Where that was the way people used to talk about it. And she doesn't know. It's the wrong thing. It's the wrong thing to say. And it's the wrong thing to think. And it's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. I think she's just reached the end of her, her time. She had a good run. Now, what we're seeing is, even with the Capuano defeat by Ayanna Pressley, I think the public is ready for new blood, for new energy, new people to come in, new progressive energy to come in and reconstitute the Democratic Party.
Key word there, progressive.
Yes.
Because new for the sake of new is the wrong way to go.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm afraid is going to happen. That you're going to wind up with some monstrosity as the speaker. I mean, it could happen. It was going to happen with Crowley.
Mm-hmm.
Crowley is as bad as it comes.
Right.
I mean, completely corrupt, very, very right wing. I mean, in the last couple of years, when he's had his mind set on being the speaker, he moderated quite a bit and just followed Pelosi. But he, every war that comes along, he's right there. And anything to do with Wall Street, he's as bad as they come. There's no Republican worse than Crowley when it comes to Wall Street. I mean, he's terrible, but he was going to be the speaker. And you know, the people that they're talking about now, there are no good people they're talking about. Oh, they're all horrible. I mean, Cherry Bustos. I can't tell you how bad it is. They're all just absolutely bad. So, Pelosi, I don't think she should be speaker anymore, but she's certainly better than them.
Yeah.
I don't want to her out to wind up with someone worse.
Right. Tim Ryan.
So, that's why I tried to talk Ted Lieu into it.
Yes.
And his wife didn't appreciate that, one thing. But, and Ted said he's never going to run against Nancy. It's not going to happen.
Uh-huh.
Although he I don't want to be talking out of school here. No one's listening, right?
No.
He would have taken on Crowley.
Oh, really? Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. But he's not going to run against Nancy, and mm-hmm. I don't, and I'm hearing that from a lot of progressives, who would like to do it, but not without Nancy's blessing.
Right.
So
I got you.
I'm kind of, and I've mentioned this before as well, but what I'm hearing, and Nancy has denied this, and she's also denied it to a very close friend of mine, who she is good friends with. So she denies it in general, and other people have said no. They've heard from her she's going to do it. So I don't know what to believe, but she has said that she's ready to make a deal, if she has to, that she'll just stay for 100 days.
Wow.
And then leave it.
Wow.
So she wants 100 days to get done the things she wants to do and then leave it. Hopefully, the things she wants to do, one of them, PAYGO, will be blocked. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
That's things that doesn't happen. Hey.
I hear you.
Let's see what happens. But I think if she goes voluntarily, there will definitely be more than one progressive who will try to get the gig.
Well, I hope so. They need to step up because now is the time. Real quickly, we got less than a minute left. There is another, I think, primary today in Delaware. We've got somebody challenging Senator Tom Carper, who...
Yes, very interesting, ultra-progressive woman. Carper is awful.
Yes.
I mean, in terms of being a very, very conservative, mm-hmm. being a corporate Democrat. So it would be a really good thing. This woman seems pretty awesome, and it would be amazing. I don't see it happening, but it would be pretty hot if it did happen. So did you not get that that music I sent you?
I have it. It's a video. And you want to set
the music part is what I was kind of hoping you could play, but that'll hold till next week.
Okay, then we'll save it for next week then. All right, Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny and the Blue America Pack. Thank you as always, Howie. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Cole. It goes by so fast with you.
I know. Thanks, Howie.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, since we didn't get to it earlier, I'll leave you with the with what's news now. Oh, you know what? I didn't even bring it up. No, I won't. You'll hear it on the Progressive Voices Network. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.